Well, thank you for checking out this Bible study podcast. I'm Randy Duncan, and in this episode, we're going to be covering Genesis chapter 34. In the last episode, we covered chapter 33, which saw Jacob and Esau meet for the first time in 20 years. And now, with that behind him, Jacob goes his own way, temporarily settling just outside the city of Shechem, which is where we pick it up here now in chapter 34. So just jumping right in, verses 1 through 4 read, "Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to see the women of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor the Hivite, the prince of the land, saw her, he seized her, and lay with her, and defiled her. And his soul was drawn to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. He loved the young woman, and spoke tenderly to her. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, 'Get me this girl for my wife.'" Now, let me say this for starters. In the Hebrew, her name is pronounced Dinah. Some say Dinah, some say Dinah, but from here on, I'm just going to say Dinah. But more importantly, it tells us that she, quote, went out to see the women of the land. So first, most commentators view this as sort of an improper or imprudent act, because girls of a marriageable age would not normally leave a rural encampment like that to go unchaperoned into an alien city, especially among the Canaanites. Furthermore, the women of that land, if you remember, they actually grieved Abraham and Isaac and Rebekah, none of which wanted their sons to marry Canaanite women. Now, the text here apparently views Dinah's unconventional act here a little bit critically, because the Hebrew verb for, quote, to go out, just like the Aramaic and the Akkadian equivalents of the word, it carries with it a meaning that can denote sort of a promiscuous or a flirtatious conduct. Now, Dinah may have made friends with some of the women of the land, or maybe she was just looking to make some friends. We don't know. What we do know is that it was risky for an unmarried young woman to venture out on her own, again, especially in this area of Canaan. But either way, it tells us that Shechem saw her. Now Shechem was the son of Hamor, who was the chief of the land. But Shechem saw Dinah, he took her, and he raped her. Now the three Hebrew verbs used here, took, and lay, and force, they are of increasing severity and sort of underscores the brutality and the seriousness of the assault. In fact, the words used here that is translated as, quote, by force, it actually means that he made her suffer. And so the use of the word here makes it clear that Dinah in no way wanted what happened to her. It was clearly rape. Incidentally, this is actually the same sequence of words used to describe the acts of the Nephilim back in chapter 6, where it says that the sons of God, quote, saw that the daughters of men were attractive, and they took any that they chose. In other words, they saw, and they took. And so it's a similar construction that's used here to describe what has happened. But verse 3 continues and tells us that Shechem was drawn to Dinah and he loved her. And so he tells his father, "Get me this girl for my wife." It's interesting. Notice one thing that's missing in the description of Shechem's actions and then his apparent feelings for Dinah. There's no apology. There's no regret over his action of raping Dinah. Furthermore, if he really loved her, would he have raped her to begin with? But Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, "Get me this girl for my wife." And actually, the word for "get me" here, it literally means "take for me." Again, it's the same root word used to describe his taking of Dinah by force. But verses 5 through 7 continue here. "Now Jacob heard that he had defiled his daughter Dinah, but his sons were with his livestock in the field, so Jacob held his peace until they came. And Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. The sons of Jacob had come in from the field as soon as they heard of it, and the men were indignant and very angry because he had done an outrageous thing in Israel by laying with Jacob's daughter, for such a thing must not be done." So, Jacob hears about what's happened, but he doesn't say anything until his sons come in from the field. Now, many commentators, they make a big deal here of Jacob's passiveness and his lack of leadership throughout this whole ordeal. Now, we'll revisit that here in a few minutes, but just something for you to sort of take note of as this scene plays out. And verse 7 says that Jacob's sons came in from the field when they heard, and they were angry because of the, quote, outrageous thing that had been done. Now, the Hebrew word there that is translated as, quote, outrageous in some versions, it's actually the Hebrew word nevelah. And it's a powerful term describing offenses that are of such profound abhorrence that they actually threaten to tear apart the fabric of Israelite society. And so, for society's protection, atrocities like this, they just can't ever be tolerated or go unpunished. So verses 8 through 12 continue. But Hamor spoke with them, saying, "The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please, give her to him to be his wife. Make marriages with us. Give your daughters to us, and take our daughters for yourselves. You shall dwell with us, and the land shall be open to you. Dwell and trade in it, and get property in it." Shechem also said to her father and to her brothers, "Let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you say to me I will give. Ask me for as great a bride price and gift as you will, and I will give whatever you say to me. Only give me the young woman to be my wife." So notice first off how Hamor is speaking to Jacob and his sons. He's talking as if nothing has happened, like he's just coming in to ask for Dinah's hand in marriage. He doesn't even mention the rape. He also doesn't mention that at this point, Dinah is being held captive in his city. He then proposes intermarriage between the two groups. "We will marry your daughters and you can marry ours." And this is exactly what Abraham and Isaac dreaded. In fact, later on in Deuteronomy, the law will actually forbid it. Deuteronomy 7 verses 3 and 4 actually say, "You shall not intermarry with them, giving your daughters to their sons or taking their daughters for your sons." And in verse 4, we read why. "For they would turn away your sons from following me to serve other gods. Then the anger of the Lord would be kindled against you, and he would destroy you quickly." And so for Hamor and Shechem, this was an opportunity for economic cooperation, but for Israel, it would have been a perversion. Hamor then continues, and now he even sweetens the deal by telling them that they'll be also allowed to acquire property. Now, this is significant because it was the most valuable prize in terms of meeting the basic needs of sojourners, and so may have very well been their greatest temptation to say yes to the deal. And so it's kind of like many commercials that we see and hear today. But wait, there's more. Shechem now enters the conversation, and he even further sweetens the deal by offering to pay whatever price Jacob and his sons name. He says, "Ask me for as great a bride price and gift as you will, and I will give you whatever you say to me." Now, just as a reminder, that bride price here, it was simply the term used to describe the payment made by a prospective husband for a bride and was paid to the bride's family. Many times it was a price that was set by custom, and so Shechem's willingness to pay far beyond that amount implies the recognition that there was just something different about this proposal. And then Shechem also throws in the offer of a gift over and above the bride price, certainly to sweeten the deal even more. But the bottom line is that they're wanting this bribe to be irresistible. I mean, it kind of makes you wonder that if Hamor and Shechem were thinking that if Jacob and his sons had heard about the rape, maybe their desire for just peace and for land and money, it would maybe cause them to overlook this whole thing. But either way, this entire offer, it's based on the assumption that Jacob and his sons could be bought. And although his offer appears outwardly to be very good and presented in a seemingly polite manner, Hamor and Shechem have undermined the character of Jacob and his sons, not to mention Dinah. Because by not mentioning the rape at all and making an offer above a fair price, they're inferring that Jacob and his sons will also overlook what happened to Dinah due to the money and the other offers being made. In other words, they assume sort of a low character for Jacob and his sons, that they would place more value on the money and the benefits than they do to their own daughter and sister Dinah. In short, they're here trying to buy off Jacob and his sons. So, how did Jacob and his sons respond? Well, verses 13 through 17 continue. "The sons of Jacob answered Shechem and his father Hamor deceitfully because he had defiled their sister Dinah. And they said to them, "We cannot do this thing to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a disgrace to us. Only on this condition will we agree with you, that you will become as we are, by every male among you being circumcised. Then we will give our daughters to you, and we'll take your daughters to ourselves, and we will dwell with you and become one people. But if you will not listen to us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and we will be gone." So it tells us here that they respond to Hamor and Shechem deceitfully. And why? Because of what had been done to Dinah. Their plan here, it hinges on pretending that they were not even aware that their sister had been raped by Shechem. And it's interesting that they don't even respond to the money or the gifts at all. It's like that isn't even part of their consideration. They make it clear that a prerequisite to marrying Dinah is circumcision, and that this is more important to them than all of the other offers. But again, we're informed right away that their entire response is a trick. They are answering with guile and with deceit. But keep in mind here a couple of things. Hamor and Shechem, they've not even mentioned the assault on Dinah. They've not admitted that a crime has even taken place. And they certainly haven't expressed any regret. In fact, Dinah is actually still being detained by them back in their city. I mean, it's not like they're just going to go and march into the chief of the city's home and take back Dinah. They are severely outnumbered here, and so planning and scheming and cunning is their only equalizer. And so they tell Hamor and Shechem that they cannot allow their sister to marry someone who is uncircumcised, because that would be a disgrace to them and their practice, because to them, the uncircumcised represented men who were on a lower level, and so was definitely not anyone who would be worthy of marrying their sister. But if they will get circumcised, then they will allow the marriage. Not only that, but all the other males are to be circumcised, and then Jacob and his sons will also agree to the other terms of the offer, to intermarry and to become one people group. Now there is a bit of irony here, because the part of the body that was used by Shechem to violate Dinah will now become the source of his own punishment, and not only him, but all the other males in town as well. But they end their comments here by saying, "But if you will not listen to us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and we'll be gone." And I wonder how Hamor and Shechem, I wonder what they thought of this. Because the way this phrase is used in the Hebrew has sort of an ominous ring to it. I mean, it's similar to the manner in which Shechem took Dinah to begin with. It means they will literally take her back by force. Verses 18 through 24 continue. "And their words pleased Hamor and Hamor's son Shechem. And the young man did not delay to do the thing, because he delighted in Jacob's daughter. Now he was the most honored of all his father's house. So Hamor and his son Shechem came to the gate of their city and spoke to the men of their city, saying, 'These men are at peace with us. Let them dwell in the land and trade in it. For behold, the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters as wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only on this condition will the men agree to dwell with us, to become one people, when every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised. Will not their livestock, their property, and all their beasts be ours? Only let us agree with them, and they will dwell with us.' And all who went out of the gate of his city listened to Hamor and his son Shechem, and every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of his city." And so what we see is that for his son's personal pleasure, Hamor agrees to the demands that would cause other men in the city, his fellow citizens, very much pain and suffering. I mean, honestly, it sounds a lot like what our politicians in Washington do even today, making these backroom agreements without our knowledge or consent, and then placing the burden on the citizens. But of course, you know, they're going to sell it. They're going to make it sound wonderful for everybody. I mean, that's what propaganda is all about. So in order to win their support and their approval, Hamor tells them that the Israelites are at peace with them, and they should allow them to live in the land and to trade and participate in the economy. After all, there's plenty of land for everybody. Not only that, but we will take their daughters as wives, and they can take ours, and we'll become one people. And so he's speaking of all of the benefits of meeting the demands of Jacob's sons. There's just one problem, though. Hamor never reveals the actual motivation and reason for the demands. He isn't honest with the people, with the men of the city. Because notice that he actually conveniently omits the fact that he has promised the Israelites that they can actually purchase land, not just live in the area, but actually acquire land. And he also implies that they will take over all of their possessions. Remember, he said, will not their livestock, their property, and all their beasts be ours? But this part was completely made up. It was completely fabricated because Jacob's sons never agreed to give up their possessions. And again, Hamor never tells them the real reason for all of this. He never mentions that it's the desire of his son Shechem and that he has raped Dinah. I mean, seriously, this could have taken place in the halls of Congress in Washington, D.C. just as easily as it took place in this city. The angle, it's the same. The deceit is the same. The dishonesty and half-truths, they're all the same. I mean, Jacob's sons were deceiving Hamor and Shechem, and Hamor and Shechem were deceiving the people of their city. Some things just never change. You know, it seems like humanity never changes, only the times do. But they have no intention here of adopting Israel's worldview or their culture, regardless of circumcision or not. This is only a means of financial and economic gain, which only reinforces their own culture. And so, like many political leaders even today, they make their own lust and their own desires appear to be in the best interest of their city and of their people. Now, it tells us that all who went out of the gate of his city listened to Hamor and his son Shechem, and every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of the city. Now, these are the citizens who agree with and comply with the terms of the deal. So when it says, quote, all who went out of the gate of the city, there are a couple of different thoughts on who exactly this is referring to. First, that may be referring to all who go out and enter the gates of the city, meaning all free citizens. But the more probable scenario here is that, quote, all who go out, it's actually just short for all who go out to war. In other words, that same verb is used in 2 Kings. It's also used in Amos in the same way. And so it would actually be referring only to males of military age. In other words, every able-bodied man. Verses 25 through 29 continue. On the third day, when they were sore, two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took their swords and came against the city while it felt secure and killed all of the males. They killed Hamor and his son Shechem with the sword and took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went away. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered the city because they had defiled their sister. They took their flocks and their herds, their donkeys, and whatever was in the city and in the field, all of their wealth, all of their little ones and their wives, all that was in the houses, they captured and plundered. Okay, so it says that on the third day, after all the males had been circumcised and were obviously in pain and incapacitated to a large degree, Simeon and Levi took their swords and killed all the males. Now, a couple of things here. It's Simeon and Levi who were leading this act of revenge because they were Dinah's full brothers, and it would have impacted them the most. But it says that they took their swords and came against the city where it felt secure. This phrase uses a Hebrew word, betah, which actually means unmolested, meaning they met no resistance. And it could also be referring to the state of the city, meaning that the city was unsuspecting or just simply caught off guard. And it is sort of ironic that this whole episode began with Dinah, quote, going out and then being taken, because this scene concludes with those same two verbs, only in reverse order. Simeon and Levi took Dinah, and then they went out. And by the way, this also verifies that Dinah was in fact being held captive in Shechem's house. But it tells us that they did this because their sister had been defiled, not because they wanted to plunder the city and steal their possessions. But even though their desire to punish Shechem is just, their actions here, they're way over the top. They're way out of line and just go far beyond what should have been done. You know, it might be that Simeon and Levi thought that they could not just go in and kill Shechem and Hamor, take Dinah, and then just leave. Because then the whole city, which would have greatly outnumbered Jacob's household, they simply would have sought revenge and attacked them. In other words, leaving any of the military-age males would have no doubt led to a counterattack. Now, the text doesn't say this, But it's reasonable to think that given the amount of violence and the amount of killing that was inflicted here, that Simeon and Levi didn't act alone. Most likely, they are specifically named because they led the attack, and they were Dinah's full brothers. In addition to that, it tells us that the sons of Jacob, referring to others, are the ones who came in and plundered the city, taking the possessions, looting, taking captives, etc. And there was simply no justification for those actions. But Simeon and Levi, they were only concerned with exacting revenge and then leaving with their sister. It was the others who came and plundered the rest of the city. And honestly, it sort of foreshadows how they would later treat their younger brother Joseph, once again bringing heartache to Jacob. But once again, there's also more irony in what happened. The men of Shechem intended to take the possessions of Jacob's household, but instead, it's their possessions that get taken. And so wrapping up this chapter then, we read the last two verses, which provide some insight into Jacob's reaction to all of this. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have brought trouble on me by making me stink to the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites and the Perizzites. My numbers are few, and if they gather themselves against me and attack me, I shall be destroyed, both I and my household." But they said, "Should he treat our sister like a prostitute?" And so we see now for the first time Jacob's reaction to all of this. Remember, there's been hardly any mention of Jacob throughout this entire episode. In fact, some people blame Jacob for his lack of leadership throughout all of this. We don't know how much Jacob knew about his son's plans. There's simply no record of him saying anything, so we just can't be sure. But regardless, here we are now, and Jacob intervenes for the first time, apparently. And he does so by berating Simeon and Levi for what they've done. I mean, he's not happy at all here. He tells them, "Look, you've brought trouble on me by making me stink to the inhabitants of the land. Again, my numbers are few, and if they gather themselves against me and attack me, I shall be destroyed, both me and my household." It is sort of interesting, sort of insightful, because Jacob is not recorded as berating them for leading a raid and killing many men in addition to Hamor and Shechem. He's upset and worried about retaliation and a potential attack on his house. Now, we don't see it right here in this scene, but to Jacob's credit, later on in Genesis, on his deathbed, Jacob strongly reprimands both Simeon and Levi for these acts of violence and cruelty. In Genesis chapter 49, verses 5 through 7, on his deathbed, Jacob says, "Simeon and Levi are brothers. Weapons of violence are their swords. Let my soul come not into their counsel, for in their anger they killed men. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel." So how's that sound for a blessing from your father on his deathbed? But in this scene, the two brothers actually have the last word. While Jacob is worried about an attack because of what they did and about losing his household and his family, Simeon and Levi ask, "Shall our sister be treated like a prostitute?" And the answer is no. No, she shouldn't. But taking Dinah by force, raping her, and then offering money and gifts and other benefits as a payoff, that's how Hamor and Shechem essentially treated her. Like a prostitute. Use her, and then pay her. And then what? Who would then be married off to a rapist, just so their household could feel safe and secure? And her brothers would have none of that. And they're calling Jacob out on his lack of action here. And they were reinforcing the idea that the women of Israel would not be regarded as objects of abuse. They wouldn't be paid off. They would not be dishonored like that without punishment. And so, as we bring this episode to a close, I just feel like I need to close out a little bit differently than I normally do. Because right now, I just personally know several people who are really struggling. They're dealing with terrible situations. They're fighting terminal diseases and illnesses, and or they've lost family members recently, or they've just received a very, very bleak prognosis. And so I want you all to know that you continue to be in my prayers. But rather than saying a lot about that, I think this song communicates a lot better than I can what many people may be feeling right now, and I pray that God will bring you some measure of comfort during the days to come. And so I'll leave you with this. Hope it blesses you.
When I can't find the words, when I can barely breathe, I'm falling on my knees. Heaven help me, heaven help me. When I can't feel you near, when I can't hear you speak, I'm falling on my knees. Heaven help me, heaven help me. Help me, help me. Heaven help me.